Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Anne Lukiewa. Right, let's get into our first story of today, and we are going to be talking about opposition within the medical establishment or within the ranks of the doctors' unions to the NHI and the growing crisis in the management of South Africa's public health system. A collective of doctors, this is from an article on the Daily Maverick, a collective of doctors from across South Africa has attacked the South African Medical Association trade union for what they say is a failure to represent the interests of health professionals, and many of them are now facing deteriorating working conditions, they say. And they say that the union must confront the deepening crisis. In their letter to this union, they say, let us speak plainly. What is happening in Gauteng, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga and everywhere else is not a technical oversight. One of the issues that they highlight is the fact that there are a very large number of young doctors who are finding it difficult to be placed in the medical system and are not getting jobs, which to my mind is an indication of a serious systemic failure. We are short on doctors. You actually produce some doctors, and then you don't even give them positions in the system. I think that's a sign of extreme decay. But they also attack the plans for the National Health Insurance Act. They say that the NHI in its current form is not a path to equity, but a pipeline for centralized corruption dressed up in the language of justice. That is an assessment I think is pretty accurate. Anlu, what concerns me so much about this story is the response from the Medical Association Trade Union is essentially saying that, oh, well, you know, there's some issues with NHI, but ultimately we can only fix the problems in South African healthcare by realizing it fully and implementing it more aggressively, which is, to me, kind of wild. What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, so I want to zoom out a little bit. If we have a look at the data, so between 1994 and, well, where we are now, 2025, 2024, spending on the public healthcare sector has increased in nominal terms, something at like over 1,500%. And this is, we have many, many young dedicated, but also old dedicated doctors that is in our public healthcare sector, and they are working extremely hard, but the standards are more often than not very, very poor. And I think we need to point the finger in the right direction if we want to firstly understand it and secondly to correct it. And that's the misguided policy of the ANC. The application, firstly, of racial targets under the Employment Equity Act has seen many people being appointed to hospitals, healthcare departments, clinics without having any of the necessary qualifications or experience. I remember there was a 2011 study, I think, done by the Development Bank of South Africa, where they pointed to exactly this problem, which is that there was something like teachers and nurses and even clerks who had only matric level education, who were running hospitals. And if you remember then, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi was health minister, and his big thing was to kind of fix the management and the management crisis in hospitals. And we still have that exact same problem. So nothing was done to this pledge of his. And we see something like 40 billion rand a year being wasted on corruption, essentially. And then how do we fix this? Let's just have a little look at the actual contrast we have in our private healthcare sector, which is a world-class system. We really have good private healthcare, but it is increasingly being out of reach of so many South Africans. Over the past 25 years, the amount of people being able to actually afford medical scheme memberships has decreased as a proportion of the total population. And that's in large part because, well, since the late 90s, the government has restricted medical aid offerings and made it so much more expensive through their regulations. A stat that stood out quite starkly to me is one that our colleague, Dr. Anthea Jeffries, pointed out in one of her recent publications, which is that back in 2015, by the Council of Medical Schemes, they approved lower cost options for medical schemes, medical aid, at 180 rand a month per adult member. How affordable is that? So, the reason I put that is the solution is not for the state to try and create more jobs in the sector. What they need to do is they need to focus on getting the management right, because that's what currently is holding back our public healthcare sector. And amongst this is that they need to insist on having value for money procurement in all our healthcare contracts, and they need to appoint people with the necessary skills and experience to actually run these public hospitals and health departments. And a quick example, I'll be quick with this, is a 1999 Sweden outsourced one of their largest hospitals. And the result of this was that the hospital cut things like the laboratory cost by 50%, and they serviced 100,000 more people. Imagine if we can do the same. In every hospital, we can service 100,000 more people per year. How many more doctors would we be able to employ? Yeah, point is, it's not the role of the government to employ these doctors. It is the role of them to play an enabling role to enable the private sector to employ these doctors.
And of course, when it comes to bad hospital management, we've had one of the most glaring examples of that was the horrible corruption cases that have come out of Tembisa Hospital, where the famous whistleblower, Babita Diokran, was murdered after she tried to blow the whistle on some of those contracts. So it's not as if the problems are difficult to find. At least there are some that are in very glaring sight. They are not difficult to see. And what is lacking here is not just bad policy, but also that old cliche, there's just a lack of political will. It shouldn't be too difficult. I see just a week ago, there was a story about how the four hospital officials at Tembisa Hospital who are on suspension following the investigation into that, their possible links to those corrupt contracts at that hospital, have been paid 3 million rand while on suspension. So clearly, it seems that being under a cloud doesn't seem to affect your remuneration very much. But anyway, let us move on to our next story. And this is something that I'm very glad is getting much more mainstream media attention. And that is the inner workings of Johannesburg's electricity entity, City Power. Johannesburg, of course, is the country's biggest city, and it is still in many ways the economic heart of South Africa. And yet it has been cursed with electricity problems above and beyond the rest of SA in many ways. Infrastructure breaking, old infrastructure not being replaced, City Power running out of money. City Power itself is in such a bad financial state that there are some reports which claim that it could drag the city's entire finances down with it. So you'd expect that there would be a little bit more attention to where money was being spent inside the entity. Well, some investigations by News 24, which is very good. This is exactly when good stuff comes out of the mainstream. I think this is a great, good example of it. Looked into what they say is misspending on consultants. City Power, according to this report, paid a consultancy 55 million rand to outsource managerial responsibilities despite employing high-earning executives required by their job descriptions to do the contracted work. This money was paid to this consulting company, which was doing a whole range of sort of these strange projects, stakeholder engagements and projects which don't seem to have any public proof that they were ever delivered to the tune of millions of rands. The companies and officials accused have denied that there's any wrongdoing here and have disputed the amount spent. But News 24 claims that it has seen the original documents with the sign off from the CEO of City Power. And Lou, what do you make of this?
Yeah, so the very first thing I did when I saw the name of the consultancy firm, I looked them up. And like many of these firms, their website, well, it's just a holding page, but their website has all these lovely, fluffy corporate buzzwords, organizational design and development, and employee satisfaction surveys and blah, blah, blah. My honest opinion is that many of those words sound like, or it reads like, a job description of chief of staff, perhaps some of the other employees already in the department. And that's exactly the problem that I think News 24 is also pointing out here, is that many of the tasks that they were outsourcing were already listed in the job descriptions of people actually employed inside the department. So the obvious next question to me is, what were those people already employed in the department doing? Because City Power isn't exactly known for great service delivery. We're still paying. We're paying both external consultants to do the work of the internal people who are already supposedly being paid for that. Then something that caught my eye was the VAT issue. You briefly mentioned that there was some discrepancies about what was actually paid out. And according to the consultancy firm, they didn't include VAT in their invoices. I'm no VAT expert, but I know that the VAT Act requires that. And that any legitimate company will automatically include VAT in their documentation and their finances. So either they are incompetent, or more likely it is just an attempt to obviously make the numbers look weaker than they actually are, which is both of these are equally as shady. And then if you'll indulge me for a second, there's a couple other, this story is just absolutely crazy to me. So I had a couple of points that really stood out to me. 600,000 Rand was spent on a brand management strategy. That is like logos and messaging and tone and communications and stuff. City Power doesn't have a branding issue. It has an electricity issue. It has a management issue. It has a debt issue. And the cherry on top, the most important part, or the one that stood out the most here for me, was the 6.3 million rand that was spent on arranging a breakfast event with stakeholders. And this is, again, they have a communications department, they have a PR department, and they spent almost 3 million rand of this on implementation. Like, did they hire Beyonce for the entertainment? I'm not entirely sure what happened there. So the point here for me is that obviously outsourcing is not inherently bad. There's a case to be made for it. We just made that case with the healthcare system. But when you do outsource, it is supposed to be because the private sector has specialized skills. Because they are the private sector, they can have niche markets. So either they need to have specialized skills offering, or they need to save you cost. And this looks like it didn't offer either of those. And it is quite, it aligns quite nicely with what we usually say, is that many of our our Institute of Race Relations surveys say that people don't care about the color of the skin of the person delivering the service. They care about the quality of the service being delivered. And if you go onto this consultancy firm's website, the first thing they highlight, the very first thing, and almost the only thing other than the contact details, is that it is 100% Black-owned, women-owned company. If this is the outcome, it kind of just proves to us to why people do not care about the color of your skin. Don't sell them out identity politics. They want the job done properly. To end this rant, the solution is, again, insisting on value for money in all government procurement practices.
Right. I think this story, if the allegations in this reporting turn out to be true, that this is a great example of the sort of nexus of politically connected elites, business people. There's some suggestion in the story that these consulting companies are owned by people who are close to the ANC, feeding off of the taxpayer and the officials involved, you know, having work done for them, so they don't have to work, and at the same time these companies producing things that they are vastly being overpaid for, which is exactly why we have so many dysfunctional government departments, because this behavior pattern is replicated across so many parts of the South African state. And City Power is unfortunately a very key player in our nation's economy. If it is not able to provide a reliable, good electricity to Johannesburg, not only does this hurt businesses, not only does this hurt middle-class homes, but who it really hurts are those who, A, depend on the employment that is provided by businesses in Johannesburg, or B, those people who don't have the money for solar panels, who don't have the money for batteries. So this is not, you know, simply stealing from the taxpayer. This is stealing from all South Africans, if indeed it's true. Okay. Last story today, or tomorrow rather, we at the IRR are launching the Right to Own Bill as an alternative to the Expropriation Act. Now, one of the reasons that the government said that it needed to amend the Expropriation Act and produce the one that was signed into law by the president this year was to correct problems with the old Expropriation Act. And that's true. There were problems with that act and it didn't need to be amended. But what was done was not to entrench and protect property rights, but to further erode them. And while it is often seen through the value, through the lens of race, this is framed as, you know, being a threat to farmers. The truth is, it is a threat to the property rights of all South Africans. Not white people, not rich people, not farmers, but all South Africans. Andu, do you want to just explain a little bit about what's in the Right to Own Bill and why we think it would be better than the current Expropriation Act?
Yeah. I think you phrased it quite nicely. It's our answer to the Expropriation Act. And where the Expropriation Act grants these sweeping powers to potentially hundreds of state entities to take property, your home or your land or your immovable assets, and in many cases below market value. This bill proposes the opposite of that. It protects your right to own and it expands this right of you to own. Really at the heart of it is a very simple idea. And the idea is that property rights are human rights, and it needs to be treated as such. And if it is treated as such, we can build wealth and stability. So the bill, what it proposes is it guarantees that market value will be paid, market value compensation, if a property is expropriated. It also introduces housing vouchers. This will help low-income households to actually build and upgrade the homes that they live in at the moment. It requires that informal settlements are formalized as a priority, because this will also enable millions of people who can actually then finally have title deeds in their hands for the property that they live on. It also pushes government and puts a demand on them to open up state-owned land that they don't use, that's underutilized, and to do so through a market-driven redistribution system. And then the last one that I'll mention here is at least the specialized unit that it calls for within the MPA to be established. And the responsibility of this unit will then be to fight land grabs and land-related fraud and protect the right of the owners of that land. So I think if you believe and I believe that ownership shouldn't be reserved for the few, then you can help to make this happen. And you do so by actually heading over to the Institute of Race Relations website and our petition and pledge your support for the Right to Own Bill. Yeah.
And if the country was adopting legislation like this and like the No More Race Laws Bill, which we've previously talked about, we think that it would go a long way towards making South Africa a better place, not just for those who've already made it, but for everyone in the country. Is the only way to defeat the demon of poverty, which ruins the lives of so many millions of South Africans. All right. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you found this show interesting. We are out of time. We will see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.